business.
Hello?
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
But they are who we thought they were.
This is going to be an interesting experiment, ladies and gentlemen. I want to start with a quote from my son, whose spring vacation began yesterday. And he said, and I quote, "I am not going to start my spring vacation with a crappy ice cream sandwich. And thus, we shall not start this podcast with a crappy ice cream sandwich either." I've got two super fans on either sides of the world with me today. We'll go first across the pond over to England, where our Bengals superfan, English Simon Hunter, is in the mid-afternoon, right?
That's right, yeah, 2:30 over here when we're recording this on Saturday afternoon. It's a lovely day, about 20 degrees. Oh, sorry, yeah, that's different for you guys. It's a lovely day in London, so yeah, great day.
Fantastic. And then across the United States of America, where it is currently 6:00 in the morning. Good morning to Ken Priest, our Chargers super fan.
Good morning, Pod. It's going to be a beautiful day, mid-70s. Excited to be on the show.
Yes. Today, here in lovely Connecticut, it is going to be about 60 degrees, a little windy. But I'm getting myself ready for a week in Las Vegas for the New Media Expo and the podcast awards, which will be happening on Tuesday evening. What is that? April 13th. So hoping to take home two more podcast awards, as I did work on the Fantasy Focus podcast for 10 out of the 12 months last year. So although one could say I probably only worked on it 6 out of the 12 months, considering all the vacation time I had. I did leave quite a bit of it on the table when I left. But that was the old job. This is the new job. Today we are going to be talking about, with the Bengals superfan and the Chargers superfan, we're going to be talking Steelers. A lot of Steelers news happened this week. And we're going to be talking about the retirement of Troy Polamalu, the suspensions of Le'Veon Bell and LeGarrette Blount. So it's technically not a Steeler there. And who's left in NFL free agency from a bargain perspective? We'll also be giving you a couple of teases as to the super fan super mock draft coming up. You can reach us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. You can also reach us on Facebook, Next Fan Up, or go to Facebook.com/NFU Podcast. You can send us an email. We'd love an email. And that's nextfanup@gmail.com. And here we go, gentlemen. Let's talk Steelers. And the big news this week, it just happened yesterday, is Troy Polamalu decided that it was time to hang up the cleats. Maybe he'll get a haircut. I guess we'll have to wait and see. But our Steelers fan, Greg, sent us this note in terms of Troy. The Steelers lost another leader, an all-time great. He will be missed, but the beat reporters have known since January that the team didn't want him back. They basically just waited until he made up his mind. They don't save any money on the cap either way, so that is why he was allowed to take his time. It saved him from the same harsh reality that Hines Ward, Casey Hampton, Ryan Clark, Brett Kiesel, and many others have faced in recent years. I think Troy was the best safety last year still, and it's hard knowing the team walked away from him, but I'm glad I don't have to watch him in another jersey like greats from the past, Carell Lake or Rod Woodson. Hall of Fame for sure, but not too happy today, but everyone knew it was coming. The leader on the Pittsburgh defense is now officially Cam Hayward. We'll start with you, Simon, since you got to see Troy Polamalu the most out of the three of us. What are your thoughts on Troy Polamalu hanging it up?
I think it was the right time, obviously. I don't think the Steelers wanted him back, which is clearly the case. And one of those players that I think was just a joy to watch it in his prime. Back in, you look at 6-7 years ago, there's probably no defensive player like him. If people sort of watching now can think of, you know, his impact when he was the best safety in the game, alongside probably Ed Reed. It's like J.J. Watt now on the defensive side of the ball. So, yeah, for us, it was not great to play against him because he was always a ferocious opponent. But No doubt somebody who helped the Steelers become as successful as they were for so many years. And hopefully he goes straight into the Hall of Fame when he's eligible. And, you know, he can enjoy retirement, which I guess is something that not a lot of players can do.
You know, Ken, I'm hearing a lot of Troy Polamalu, first ballot Hall of Famer. I'm not completely sold. What do you think?
You know, in terms of the first ballot Hall of Fame, I don't know if he's definitely worthy of the Hall of Fame, because if you look at the last decade in the NFL, if you think who are the two best safeties off the top of your head, you always think Ed Reed and Troy Polamalu. He really killed the Chargers whenever the Steelers would play, and so I'll always think of him as one of the great safeties of the past decade. I don't know if he'll be first ballot, but I think he's absolutely worthy of being in the Hall of Fame. He might be a little too injury prone to make it in that first ballot, because he did miss a lot of time, especially in those later years. You couldn't always count on him week to week, but he was a fantastic player.
Yeah, you know, that's exactly what came to my mind. When he was on the field, he was absolutely dominating, but that was a big if when he was on the field. So his rookie year, he started no games. Then he played two full seasons in 2004, 2005, where he, you know, was a dominant safety for sure. Only 13 games in 2006, 11 in 2007. Played a full season in 2008, but missed most of the 2009 season. Missed a couple games in 2010. Played a full season in 2011. Missed over half the season in 2012, playing only seven games. Played a full season in 2013. And last year, he ended up missing four games. And, well, that's what we got here for Troy Polamalu. Simon, what do you think? First ballot Hall of Fame or no?
Yeah, I think he is. I think he's somebody who, when you think about the safety position, I think he redefined it to some degree. And he's obviously a Super Bowl champion. He's been defensive MVP, I believe, back in 08 or something like that. And I think when you look at, you know, the Hall of Fame sort of list, you're looking for players that sort of transcend their position into a degree. And I think he did that quite often. And, you know, you associate those great Steel defenses with Troy Polamalu. And, yeah, I think the fact he's got two rings as well, I think that to me says, yeah, Hall of Fame the first time around.
He was the AP Defensive Player of the Year in 2010. He was a Pro Football Hall of Fame second team All 2000s team. He made 8 Pro Bowls in his career, and a first team All Pro for four seasons. Listen, I was basically playing devil's advocate. I think Troy Polamalu is a Hall of Famer, and I agree wholeheartedly when you think about the 2000s, the two safeties that come right to your lips are Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed. So, and I was watching NFL Network, the last true safety. So taking Rod Woodson out of the equation, because he played some corner, but the last true safety to be inducted in the Hall of Fame was Ronnie Lott. The Hall of Fame could certainly use a couple of safeties, and that bust is definitely going to be one of the more popular ones, I'm sure, when it gets put in Canton. Some more Steelers news. Le'Veon Bell, his suspension was finally dealt out. He's going to miss three games, the first three games of the season, for violating the NFL's substance abuse policy. Let's read what we have here from our Steelers fan, Greg. He says, if the suspension stays at three games, they need another running back. I would like to see them grab a vet like Bradshaw. Ahmad Bradshaw is still available, or a fourth round rookie. Bell missed three games as a rookie in the playoff game last year. They are winless without him, which tells me no depth at running back, and I don't trust D'Angelo Williams for three games. And I guess that's where I have to sort of disagree here with Greg. I think you can trust the veteran D'Angelo Williams for three games and bring in Le'Veon Bell right after that. And just like last year, I highly doubt they're going to miss that much of a beat. They'll probably improve as soon as Bell starts taking the rock. Ken, what do you think about the Steelers without Le'Veon Bell for three games?
I think you hit the nail on the head with you can trust D'Angelo Williams for three games. He's obviously a back that can't withstand the punishment of a 16-game season, but he's been really good over the years in short spurts. And so, obviously, adding another running back to add to that depth would be ideal for the Steelers. I think Bradshaw would be a good fit there. But in terms of just those first three games, I think D'Angelo Williams could be relied upon because he's proven it in the past, just not over a 16-game schedule.
That is awesome. Gentlemen, we are joined now mid-show. Special guest appearance from the true Patriots superfan, Patrick Siska. Patrick, how are you?
I'm good, guys. How you doing?
We are fantastic. We are talking about the Steelers. We just finished talking about Troy Polamalu's retirement. We're now talking about the Steelers without Le'Veon Bell for three games. How do you think the Steelers will fare for those three games?
I guess that's a dodgy question, right? Because, Le'Veon Bell is a great back and everything, but I did not watch every Steelers game last year. For me, it's tough to draw an easy corollary between a running back being out and a team being bad, right? Was the entire offensive line out too? Were they just incapable of running the ball? Were they bad matchups? Did they just get beat? I don't know. They have a couple of great wide receivers there and really, really, really good quarterback. I imagine their offense could still move the ball as long as they're able to make the safeties draw up a little bit by respecting the run. And I think you can do that with just about anybody for three games by turning around and handing them the ball.
Simon, do you want to see the Steelers with or without Le'Veon Bell?
Oh, 100% without. If you look at his game... Clearly. Yeah. When the schedule comes out in a few weeks, I'm praying that we play Pittsburgh in those three games. Because last year, to be fair, in the final game of the season, we held him pretty much in check, and that was the game he got injured in. But in the game in Cincinnati, when we got absolutely gashed in the fourth quarter, this is just his stats, reading them off the list here. 26 attempts, 185 yards, and two TDs, including a 53-yard touchdown. So not ideal. That's not the only thing he did. Obviously, he's a great pass catcher as well. He had over 80 catches last year, 83 in total in the regular season. And in that same game I mentioned, he had six catches for 50 yards. So that's over 200 yards of offense. And that, to me, is probably where you'll go missing because Ben obviously led the league in passing yards last year. They become more of a passing team. But, you lose those sort of 6 to 10 catches a game from Le'Veon Bell, and it makes your offense a bit more one-dimensional. And I think that's kind of, anyone will tell you, when that happens to a team, that's obviously better for the opponent. So, yeah, if we play him in those first 3 weeks, I think it'd be a lot easier without him than it will be with him.
Oh, totally. And as a Patriots fan, I'm really hoping that we open the season playing the Steelers without Le'Veon Bell, don't get me wrong. I don't believe in addition by subtraction. I'm not making the argument that when you lose a starter at any position, you're okay. Well, I guess I am making that argument because I think that the running back position, even with the great ones, is still kind of utilitarian. I don't think that it just eliminates them from contention by losing a running back as if they have lost Ben Roethlisberger, right? You lose Roethlisberger, as an AFC rival, I'm dancing in my chair a little bit. Like that to me is a serious, serious, serious loss. And Le'Veon Bell out for three games is more of an inconvenience.
So he's appealed his suspension, and Greg has mentioned that rumors have it that his appeal may get shortened to two games, but we'll have to wait and see. His riding mate, the reason why he was suspended is because his teammate at the time, LeGarrette Blount, who is now with our team, Patrick, is going to miss the opener of the season. How do you feel about the Patriots without LeGarrette Blount?
I'll make the same exact argument I just made for Le'Veon Bell, only more so. They're going to turn around and hand it to somebody that is going to run to the line of scrimmage and try and pick up 3 or 4 yards. You're going to lose the breakout play. Like you're not going to see anybody from the Patriots you know, sidestep a D tackle, run back across the grain and pick up 40 yards on what should have been a busted play. But you really shouldn't be relying on those anyway. Those are nice to have. So you might get one every 4 or 5 games. So again, you know, is it going to be an inconvenience? Yes. Are we going to have to rely on somebody that we probably haven't relied on before and wouldn't necessarily want to rely on? Yes. But it's not the same thing as losing Tom Brady or even Rob Gronkowski, you know, and across the league, you can make a similar argument for tight end that you do to running back in that, you know, you have great ones and they're really great, but how truly impactful are they, you know, on an individual game by game basis? It depends on the matchups.
You know, it's surprising to hear you say that, because if there was any team in the league that proved that the running back position is maybe slightly overrated, it was the Patriots of last year, using a different lead running back, you know, pretty much every month of the year.
Yeah, and winning the Super Bowl without a key running back.
Right. So, you know, I suspect we're going to see a lot of Jonas Gray. That, you know, a lot of these mock drafts have the Patriots maybe looking at running back in that first round if Todd Gurley falls that far. I personally would not like to see a pick wasted on a running back in the first round. What are your thoughts there, Patrick?
I couldn't agree more. I think it's a position. It's just like middle linebacker, just like fullback. You know, it's a position that used to be really important. And while you can still find greatness there at any position, you can find a great punter, you can find a great kicker. And those people, if they're truly great, they can make a difference to a team that's discernible. But do you burn a first-round pick on a guy that isn't really 100% involved, which to me is what that means? So a quarterback that is 100% involved in every offensive snap, a defensive tackle is 100% involved in every defensive snap, right? They're always important to the play. And a running back, you know, if you're throwing the ball, you know, 2/3 of the time, even if they're a good pass catcher, and I guess this is where Le'Veon Bell gets into that, you know, mix a little bit, they're not really going to be a focal point of your offense. You don't have to depend on them consistently. So, yeah, there's a significant opportunity cost there when you're talking about, you know, investing a resource in a second tier position like that, player notwithstanding, right? Like, in, yes, Todd Gurley is a great player. He could be a difference maker, or he could bust out, you know, or he could get, you know, injured after a season and a half and never make it to a second contract, which is true for, you know, so many people. So do you want to waste your fifth year option, which you get in the first round pick, on a running back when really you don't necessarily want a lot of these guys after 5 years anyway?
Kenton, your team, the Chargers, is one that's always struggled at the running back position. What are your thoughts here on running backs in the NFL, and specifically with your team?
So the Chargers have said in the paper, or it's been reported, that they're okay going into next season with the trio that we currently have on the roster, which is Donald Brown, Danny Woodhead, and Brandon Oliver. Now, I don't know who in that group is your every down bell cow back that can hold up for 16 games, or for, yeah, for 16 game schedule. But I don't think that we necessarily need that player. I think the problem with the running game last year was not the running back, but the offensive line, which they've already made improvements on this offseason that I mentioned earlier in the past podcast. I don't necessarily think that they should go running back in the first round, as I've mentioned before. I think they'll probably pick up a running back in the later rounds of the draft. But one player I do not want them to get is Melvin Gordon out of Wisconsin, because I do not trust Wisconsin running backs. I think that college is going to always have a good running game, and I think that the backs that come out of there are slightly overrated. So it'll be interesting to see. I think if they did start the next season without picking anyone up, I think Brandon Oliver would be your – starter out of the gate, and I think it would be an absolute rotation. But again, I don't think that running backs are necessarily that important, and the Patriots, like you said, have, I mean, been the ones that proved that theory right. I mean, who was the last great Patriots running back that they had? I mean, it, you have to look back
Robert Edwards. Long ways.
Yeah,
clock, I mean, killing Corey Dillon.
Yeah, I was going to say Corey Dillon. But the Patriots have been really, really good, and they haven't had a really good running back in a long time. I mean, we obviously had LT in San Diego, who was just absolutely amazing. But you look at those teams, LT was only on two really good teams. The Chargers can be good without a running back.
Simon, your team, the Bengals, is probably the one with the least amount of questions at running back.
Yeah, we're set. And I think the reason we are set is because we spent two second-round picks on two guys who have been really helpful to taking away the limitations of Andy Dalton. And I think when you guys talk about you don't need a running back, it's because you have quarterbacks, and therefore your offense doesn't need to be protected by a running game per se. Now, maybe in San Diego, with concerns over Rivers' health, maybe that's more of a case, but I think when you've got a great quarterback and that, you know, the passing game is kind of what leads your team, then yeah, running back becomes secondary. But in Cincinnati, when we have Andy Dalton and we have the limitations that he provides, yeah, having Jeremy Hill, having Giovanni Bernard is hugely important for us to make sure that, you know, we have a good staple to our offense. And also in the AFC North, you have to run the ball effectively, and because, you know, teams are physical, it's colder in December and in January, and I think, yeah, for us it's important, but still second round picks, you know, not expensive guys, and I'm pretty sure in two years time we'll probably reinvest again in a younger player with a sort of second, third round grade.
Anybody here on this call want to raise their hand for Ahmad Bradshaw? Take that as a no.
I don't want Ahmad Bradshaw. I do want Adrian Peterson. There were rumors earlier in the offseason that Adrian Peterson was willing to go to San Diego, but those rumors have pretty much died down. But I would love Adrian Peterson. I think that would be an absolute home run. You stick Adrian Peterson with Rivers, and I think that is the best offense in the league. But like I said, I don't think that's going to happen. But if it did happen, I would applaud it. I would run out and get Adrian Peterson jersey immediately.
Would you wear that Adrian Peterson jersey in public? Because, you know, wow. Like, I know he's the best running back in a generation, but just, like, there's a reason why he's available right now, and I wouldn't want him anywhere near my team. And I have a player right now who's on trial for multiple murders. Like, so, like, I'd rather have Aaron Hernandez on my team, honestly, than Adrian Peterson.
Really?
Wow. Wow.
Yeah, well, I have 2.7 children, right? So I'm a dad, and somebody that does that to their kid, I want nothing to do with them.
Fair enough. I don't know if I would go so far as to say I'd rather have Aaron Hernandez than Adrian Peterson.
That might have been a bit too far. That might have been a bit too far. I do find it funny that maybe this is just representative of sentiment in the different, you know, demographic groups that those players represent. Like Adrian Peterson is just, he's seen as it's reprehensible. And obviously I feel the same way. I don't think the same amount of attention, and correct me if I'm wrong, because I am not across the country, but I don't know if the same amount of attention has really been given to Aaron Hernandez, you know, given the severity of what he did. I mean, he puts OJ to shame, you know, if he's found guilty of everything he's been accused of. And it's been, I don't know, relatively quiet, I think, for Aaron Hernandez. Or maybe that's just me because I'm in Boston.
How's the coverage of the Hernandez trial been out on the West Coast, Ken? Has it basically just been ESPN and NFL Network?
You'll hear about it occasionally on the radio, but it's certainly not a topic of discussion. It's on the ESPN, and we don't hear too much about it. I'll hear bits and pieces, but the guy sounds like a psychopath to me.
Mm. Simon, how about in England? I can't imagine there's much Aaron Hernandez.
There's been the odd bulletin. We have a channel over called Sky Sports News, which is essentially ESPN. And it's, from time to time they cover it. But I think until the the decision's made on if he's guilty or not, then I think there'll be some news then. But yeah, we've had nothing on that, and I think it's not really big news in this country, but still, I think over there, it's obviously it's huge news. But yeah, hopefully, I mean, but going back to the Adrian Peterson thing, you know, I'm just really fascinated to see how that plays out once he's reinstated. Is it next week, I believe, to see what the Vikings do? Because if I was the Vikings, you know, I'd look to move on as quickly as possible because of the way he's acted and also just the impact he's going to have on the local community. So for me, I'm interested to see how that sort of turns out sort of next week or so.
I think, you know, Adrian Peterson is definitely not going to be a bargain replacement for sure. Ahmad Bradshaw, we've already mentioned as a possible bargain replacement. I'm looking at this article here from Bleacher Report on some of the best remaining bargains to fill out rosters. And Ahmad Bradshaw was listed as a running back option. One guy that I've got a jersey ready for this guy, wide receiver Greg Jennings. I wouldn't mind seeing Greg Jennings catching some passes from Tom Brady, Patrick.
I mean, I can't argue with that. Yes, we could use some more depth. The problem that I have with bringing in wide receivers is that, again, probably 2/3 of the time, they don't make it through training camp. You know, it's the expectations for being able to grasp the offense here are extremely high. Like, how many guys have we brought in the last 10 years that were like, okay, awesome. Yeah, no, great. We're like, this guy will be awesome. And then, you know, you see him in training camp and he's running the wrong route constantly. And 2 weeks later, he's on the street again, you know? So it's tough to get excited, you know? And I see all these, you know, wide receivers in this year's draft class, you know, I'm wringing my hands together saying, okay. Here we go. Like, let's get some replacement guys in here. Like, let's start feeding the pipeline. And then I'm like, well, do I really want to see them burn another second round draft pick on a wide receiver that they're going to cut in 2 years?
That, you know what I'm saying? If there was a position for the Patriots that tends to burn out rather quickly, where there's lots of hype and lots of hope, it is the wide receiver position. It's been difficult unless you're that little slot guy with the name of Wes Welker or Julian Edelman to really stick around here in New England. How's your wide receiver depth chart looking like, Simon?
It's going to look better if Marvin Jones comes back. We are 100% going to draft maybe two receivers this time around. And if you look at the way that we ended last year, no AJ Green, no Marvin Jones, no Tyler Eifert, and also no Jermaine Gresham in that playoff loss. Obviously, we need to surround a quarterback like Andy Dalton with weapons. And, you know, I think it's looking okay. But like I said, I think we will definitely address that with a couple of guys in this draft in what looks a fantastic class again. We're blessed. But it's a bit easier, to adapt to the program in Cincinnati than it is in New England, where the demand on those receivers to run the routes and also those option routes as well, effectively, is obviously hugely important. And I think a guy out there who I think as well is obviously had no attention whatsoever is Michael Crabtree. Could he potentially be a fit in New England? Because he is a smooth route runner. I know a little bit of an issue in the locker room, but that's not really been an issue in the past in New England.
I don't have my hand raised on Michael Crabtree just because of his off the field sort of demeanor. I think he's a little bit of a cancer in the locker room. And he thinks a little too highly of himself for what he's actually done in the NFL. I don't have my hand raised for Michael Crabtree. Ken, is Philip Rivers looking at either of these two options as another weapon in his holster?
I think the key word that you mentioned was bargain, and I don't think Michael Crabtree at this point is going to be a bargain because I think that he thinks too highly of himself. So if we could get him to come in on a decent-sized deal, I wouldn't be opposed to that, but I think he's going to ask for too much money. And the Chargers already got their free agent wide receiver in Steve Johnson this offseason, so I don't think they're necessarily clamoring for another wide receiver. We also brought in Jacoby Jones. I don't know if he's going to play much in the offense necessarily. I thought that was more of a move towards special teams. But in terms of who is that wide receiver you're talking about?
Greg Jennings.
Greg Jennings. I thought he was going to, I thought he was signing in San Diego because he posted on Twitter on March 31st from San Diego that he was making an announcement. But then that ended up just being an April Fool's joke where he announced that he wasn't signing anywhere. I would have been happy with that. I don't know if the Chargers necessarily want Greg Jennings. I think he's pretty old and he hasn't really done much since he left Aaron Rodgers. So I don't know. I don't think we need Greg Jennings. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Chargers picked up a wideout in the draft. I think the time is running short on Malcolm Floyd, who has been an amazing wide receiver for us. He's been one of the most underrated wide receivers in the league. He catches everything, and Rivers loves to use him as a safety blanket. Because other than him and Keenan Allen, the only other young guy we have on the team that has shown any sort of promise was Dontrell Inman, who was, I believe, undrafted. But other than that, we don't really have any special talents at the wide receiver spot on the Chargers. Keenan Allen is a great receiver, but he's not a burner by any means, and he's not huge. He's just kind of a guy who runs really solid routes, which is, of course, very useful. But the Chargers haven't had a big star wide receiver since Vincent Jackson, who was my favorite player when he was on the team because he was so game-breaking for Rivers. I'd love to see them have an athletic freak, whether that's a speed guy or a big receiver to stick on the outside that can make huge plays, because I think Malcolm Floyd's time is coming to an end very within the next season or two.
A couple of offensive linemen are listed here as potential bargains in Joe Barksdale, a right tackle, and Chris Meyer, center from the Texans. And in New England, I don't necessarily think we need another tackle, but Chris Myers, you know, I might have a jersey waiting for him, especially if Dan Conley's not coming back. Patrick, what do you think of either of those two options heading to New England?
Yeah, I think we, as a team, the biggest need is definitely guard. I would argue both guard spots. And I'm perfectly happy to take a tackle and kick him inside to guard if that's what we need. I also think that probably we're going to be depending on a June 1st cut to pick up a guard, because I with the same argument I made earlier about the value of the position in the draft, do you really want to spend one of your first two draft picks on an interior offensive lineman? I don't know. I don't think you do, because the value of the position is relatively low. Yet we need somebody to come in and probably start at least one of those positions. So that's kind of telling me the team need is definitely there, and I don't have a lot of answers on the depth chart. So it's got to be probably a June 1st cut or a draft pick.
And how about in San Diego for the offensive line?
Oh, yeah, we got two jerseys waiting for both of them. I think at this point, any sort of offensive line depth that we can acquire would be welcomed in San Diego. I think we went through six centers last season. So anyone with a pulse that can hike it to Rivers is going to be welcomed with open arms. And right tackle right now, from what I've heard, I think DJ Fluker is moving into guard. And so that would open up a spot for Barksdale on the outside. I'm actually not, it's curious to me as to why the Chargers haven't brought those guys in, at least for a workout.
Simon, what are the biggest needs left for the Cincinnati Bengals?
Well, quarterback, obviously, but in all seriousness, we've done a really good job, actually, of making sure we're kind of able to be open in the draft. The one area, and this is very unfortunate, is tight end. We're in dire need of getting a sort of blocking guy in there. But obviously, with a weakish draft class and a weakish free agent sort of class, it's not been addressed yet. So the thought that Jermaine Gresham could come back, I think a lot of fans, you know, were happy to see the back of him. But if it's a good deal, then why not? We've done a really good job in the last week or so, bringing guys back on the sort of minimum to give ourselves options down the road. So I'd say, yeah, it's tight end probably the number one safety potentially. Reggie Nelson has 1 year left of his deal, and he's 32 this year. So yeah, they're probably the two areas I think we need to look into.
Patrick, there's two more guys on this list of potential bargains from Bleacher Report, and they're both defensive players. One's a defensive end in Daquan Bowers, who I think is exactly the kind of guy that Bill Belichick likes to pick up around this time of free agency, maybe even right at the beginning of June, who could come in and actually make himself a bigger contract for next year. The other guy is Brandon Spikes, who we've seen on this team before. I don't necessarily have my hand raised for Brandon Spikes, but linebacker is definitely an area of concern for this team.
It absolutely is, and that's exactly what they need. They need a thumper that they can rely on to come in for at least a couple of games at the start of the year and play. And, I mean, he's a bit of a character, but he's not terrible. And, yeah, I would welcome him back on the team, since we don't have any real depth at linebacker, especially at middle linebacker. And everybody that we would have start there is, in theory, probably going to be on the PUP list to start the year, right? So, or at least start camp. So if nothing else, you need a guy to get through camp and hopefully not rely on him in the first couple of games of the season. But that's a possibility you need to plan for. And frankly, you know, for the amount of money he would cost, for the amount of faith that you have that he at least knows how to play in your system, I think he'd be a great pickup.
So a lot of these guys remain unsigned essentially because the NFL draft is coming, and a lot of these teams might be looking at the draft to fill some of these remaining holes. Ken, without giving up whom you've taken in the Superfan Super Mock Draft, what players are you hoping sort of fall to the Chargers as the draft rolls out coming up at the end of this month?
Okay, so yeah, I'm hoping that looking on the offensive side of the ball in terms of the entire draft. In the first three rounds, I want an offensive lineman. I think that there will be an offensive lineman for the Chargers to select with their first pick at 17. My philosophy going into the mock draft was that I was going to more or less ignore defense unless that there was someone there that I really coveted, because I think the defense was really good last year. And I think John Pagano has done a really, really good job getting those guys, getting young guys ready to play, and then using veterans to fill in some of the gaps. So I went into this mock draft thinking, let's get Rivers some help any way that we can.
Simon, same thing for you. What are you looking for in the NFL draft coming up on April 30th?
Well, obviously a quarterback. I'm sorry. No, I honestly think I like the meat and potatoes picks that I like to go sort of address the lines early on. I think you get those sort of quality players there. Tight end's obviously an option for us. Wide receiver's an option for us. So yeah, we're kind of looking to add more beef to the lines, and also potentially add a bit of explosion on the outside.
Patrick, where are you hoping the Patriots do here in the NFL draft?
So the Patriots in the draft, it's funny to think about this as a Super Bowl champion that hasn't really been rated. But we have some significant holes. Yeah, so we lost both of our starting corners, which actually for me, this is odd. I think that makes strong safety our biggest need. You know, because last year we were able to play with Patrick Chung, who played reasonably well because so little was asked of him, because you had Darrell Revis walking down one side of the field. We're not going to be able to do that this year. We can't really rely on Chung to play a deep half with who knows playing corner underneath, right? So I assume we're going to see a lot of deep balls on that side, and I've seen Chung trying to defend the deep balls, and it's not good. We're going to go back to where we were 2 years ago, and really the four total years before that, where people are just launching bombs on us, and we're we're letting Jag quarterbacks put up 350 yards reliably every game. So I want a safety back there. Now, the problem there is that this isn't exactly a great safety class, so you're probably going to have to take a corner and convert them. And that's a gamble in its own right. The other is defensive tackle. We lost the field for him. I mean, that's sad, but I get it. It's not like he was tearing up the league last year, although he did play pretty well. But we didn't have solid starting depth behind them. We have depth because we have guys that were forced into starting roles the year before and they played reasonably well, but we don't necessarily have two tackles that I want out there on, you know, the start of any given series. We drafted one last year, but he's not really your two gap, just stop this pile from moving forward kind of guy that Vince Wilfork was. So I want a big fat guy up front. And I talked earlier about our need for interior offensive line. It's sad, but, you know, we're probably going to have to burn an early pick on a guard, which is, you know, next to punter, probably the least exciting position on the field. But, you know, if you don't have one, then you have Tom Brady, you know, ducking and covering constantly, and that's not exactly going to help our offense. So for me, those are our top three priorities. It's defensive back, probably a safety, defensive tackle, and guard.
Ken, I'm sitting here looking at an article, Philip Rivers last season with the Chargers. We've talked about the potential move to L.A. and the rumors that Rivers doesn't necessarily want to go there. Are you buying any of this? Do you think that the Chargers could possibly even be considering Marcus Mariota?
You know, I said last time that I wasn't considering it at all. And then Kevin Acey, who's a writer for the UT, he said that his confidence level for Rivers being on the team past this season was a 6, which doesn't really make me feel very good. Now, I don't know if he was writing that to get to make some noise or if that's truly how he felt, but I started to think about it once I read that from him. And the only way that I would see is Rivers not being on the team after this year is if they traded for Marcus Mariota. And the only reason I think that is even, you know, 1% chance, I don't even think it's that, is because Mike McCoy has proved in the past with Tim Tebow that he can make a mobile quarterback work in the NFL. Now, do I think that's going to happen? No. Would I be shocked beyond all belief? Absolutely. But if he decided to pull the trigger and trade Rivers for Marcus Mariota, I would believe that he thinks that he can make it work, and I would get excited about it. And the only way that I can see that happening is if Rivers is really more hurt than he's letting on. Last year, at the end of the season, he was extremely injured, and that he'll never be the same ever again. That's the only way that I can see that happening. And in that scenario, if Rivers is really hurt and he's not going to come back, I'm jumping for joy if we can trade him. But, you know, he's my favorite player. I have all the confidence in the world that he's going to come back to the elite level that he was playing against when he, you know, diced up the Seahawks when we played week 2 last year.
Simon, you've been joking about the need for a new quarterback. I don't think any of us expect the Bengals to make a move at quarterback, but let's play hypothetical land. And let's say that they make a move for Marcus Mariota. What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's hard because you live in reality, and obviously that is kind of would never happen with the Bengals, not also a team. But if it was to happen, I'm not sure it's an upgrade over Dalton. And I know I've joked a lot today, but Andy is a kind of middle-of-the-road guy and has won, you know, 9 or 10 games on average every season. And so I think it's kind of the thing that we'll have to do in all seriousness is try and make his job as easy as possible next year. And then next year we can cut him. But yeah, if that was on the table and we put our eggs in one basket, we could ostensibly just develop Mariota and ultimately, yeah, hopefully have him step in next year. But I'm not sure that we would be in a position to do that. I just don't think it's our nature. But yeah, it would be exciting.
I mean, besides these quarterbacks, is there any sort of sexy story coming out of this draft, guys? I mean, is there anything that's got us really fired up?
The thing I'm happiest about. Sorry.
I know in the mock draft that we've been doing, the wide receivers have been very coveted. The wideout class is something that the super fans have been very excited about. To give a tease.
It's a great class, and it's a very sexy pick, isn't it? When you're on the when you're in the fake GM chair, and I think it's been very exciting to see people make moves and go for things. But also, the offensive line has been a bit of an interesting sort of ploy in the sort of 20s to give it a little bit more of a tease away. But I think it's quite a boring draft, isn't it? No one's really excited about it. I think the thing I'm happiest about is that it's not in New York anymore, and the Jets fans can't moan or do all their really annoying shouting to ruin the event. So I'm excited to see what it looks like in Chicago as well.
I mean, the Chicago thing is sort of an interesting twist on this year's draft. Karen, what if the draft were held in San Diego?
That'd be awesome. I was actually hoping the draft was going to be in LA because my dad and I were going to drive up and go to it. So I was bummed to hear that it was going to be in Chicago. But honestly, if the draft was in San Diego, I think that'd be a big mistake for the NFL because I don't know too many San Diego fans who would go out to the draft necessarily. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they would to see the Chargers pick. I don't see it getting the fanfare that it does in New York or Chicago in San Diego necessarily.
Patrick, what if it was in Boston?
I mean, if it were Boston, makes some sense because it's a city where people might want to just go and look for a reason to go. But I always thought that the draft should be held in whatever city has the first pick, and just rotate it that way. I think that'd be interesting. But then again, I'm conflicted. You and I have emailed back and forth on this in the past. As a fan of the draft, I want to see every individual player covered, and I want discussion on the 199th pick by the panel as the pick is being made. And what I see is a real proclivity to go back to the first overall pick and just talk and talk and talk for 2 days about the first pick. And really, after about 10 minutes, I stopped caring. So I think that if you move the entire venue to where that pick is, that just happened more instead of less. And I, as a super fan, lose interest in the draft coverage.
So that would be interesting to have the draft every year in Oakland. It would be be a tough call. I like that idea of rotating the draft with whomever has the first pick. It's not a bad one.
It's a really quiet time. I think everyone just wants the draft to get here now, and I'm just excited about that. I've booked off the day after so I can stay up and watch it with my friends, have a few beers, and enjoy the spectacle of another exciting time.
So, ladies and gentlemen, it is quite a quiet time now in the NFL, and everybody seems to be getting ready for the draft. It starts on Thursday, April 30th. That'll be the first round. The second and third rounds are on Friday the 1st, and then the draft finishes up on Saturday, May 2nd. As I mentioned earlier, next week I will be away at the New Media Expo in Las Vegas, so you will actually have a Pod Vader free week, folks. It'll be whichever fan is next to step up, hosting hopefully once during the middle of the week, and then again next Saturday, the 18th. You'll be left in the fine hands here of the super fans. We will be doing the Superfan Super Mock Draft the following week. We'll start revealing what those picks are, and we'll go pick by pick, team by team. So each superfan, you'll be able to hear each and every superfan talk about who they've chosen for their team. We are still looking for a Cardinals superfan. So if you love the NFL like the rest of us do, you know your team inside and out, please send us an application, nextfanup@gmail.com. That's the way you get a hold of us. We'd love to have you. We'd love to have you join us here on our roundtable discussions. If you want to tweet at us, feel free to do that. don't tweet your application. Your application is going to be too long. It was only 140 characters. Well, actually, at this point, we're kind of desperate. Maybe you'd still get in. We are at NFU Podcast on Twitter. Our Charger superfan, Ken Priest, is at Kenneth J. Priest on Twitter. Simon, what are you on Twitter?
I'm at Simon Hunter underscore.
Simon Hunter underscore. And Patrick?
I'm too old to tweet. I don't have Twitter.
Oh, well, there you go. So if you have any negative Patriots tweets, I guess you have to send them to me at The Real Pod Vader. I know last week's discussion about Deflategate really caught the ire of our Eagles superfan. It was kind of interesting to see his retort on email to what I had said last week about the NFL blowing the thing out of proportion during the week before the Super Bowl.
Yeah, let me ask you something, Jay. Like, at what sure. point does this just become libel? Like, not to get too serious about it, but seriously, like every guy in a suit, you know, with the exception of Trent Dilfer, went on TV, which is an odd exception, went on TV and just completely lambasted the individual characters of Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, Robert Kraft. Like, they just hit everybody and said they should be thrown out of the league. They're despicable. They do this all the time. And all of it has been completely groundless for 10 years. Like, this is, it's getting to the point where it's just not even funny anymore. Like, this should start getting litigious.
Well, not completely groundless considering Deflategate.
Okay, all right. I guess we found another topic.
Or not the Spygate. My bad.
Okay, so, all right, let's talk about Spygate for a second. So, would you say you know a lot about Spygate or very little about Spygate?
A medium amount.
Medium amount. Okay. What rule did they break with Spygate?
Yeah, but I think that's the thing with the Patriots. Just to interject. Sorry. It was just that they know that the rules aren't in place, so they bend it till a point where they're caught or somebody changes the rules. But that's kind of why people don't like them. I don't disagree with.
No, that's cool. And you touched on it, Simon. So until they change the rules. There was a rule proposal effectively coming from the league office saying, yeah, you need to stop videotaping coaches on the sideline, sent to the entire league. Because everybody did. If you remember games back in, you know, 2000, 2001, really right up until 2006, it was almost ridiculous. They showed every coach on the sideline holding their play sheet in front of their face as they were making calls because they were concerned about being filmed, because they were. Every team in the league was. And, you know, the league sent out a letter saying, hey, stop doing this. Well, the league can't just change the rules. They can't just say it's now against the rules to do this when every team is doing it. So Belichick didn't stop doing it, right? And the real problem here, is that, well, one, the rule change didn't happen until the next year after they had already been fined, lost the first round pick, had their names dragged through the mud. But the other issue with all of this is that Bill Belichick, ever since he's been in Cleveland, has just been such a curmudgeon to the media. Like, they hate him. And any opportunity that they would get to just go after the guy, they took. And that's what we saw here. Like, we saw them just eviscerating Belichick because it was 10 years of pent-up rage over what really amounted to nothing. Like, he kept doing what he was doing because the rule change hadn't happened yet, right? And here we are 10 years later, anytime he's accused of anything, the sharks come out swimming, and then you find out, you know, 3-4 months later, well, that actually never happened. We made the whole thing up. Or, like, somebody said it happened, so we just took his word for it, and we ran with it without doing any lick of research whatsoever, which is, I mean, if Walter Cronkite were alive today, he'd be going after these guys, like, in the NFL, saying, do you have any shame? Right? It's to that level of ridiculousness, you know, that I feel like I constantly have to defend my team, who really, in terms of moral character for the NFL, you don't get a whole lot higher than the Patriots. You know, I know, ironically, they have a player that's on trial for murder right now, but it's true. Like, they don't break the rules. You don't have guys retiring from the Patriots and say, like, oh, like, you wouldn't believe the amount of steroids that they were handing out in the locker room or anything like that. Like, it's, for all intents and purposes, they're a pretty squeaky clean program. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox now.
That was a pretty awesome soapbox. I mean, you're not going to get any rebuttal from me, but I'm waiting for either Simon or Ted to let it rip.
That was one of the best rants I've ever heard. But I think the best, you know, head coaches, managers in any sport will be loving that sort of abuse coming towards their way, because they can create like this whole siege mentality where it's like everyone's against us. You know, we're doing it against the odds. We're in this together. And that, to me, is like the reason why Man United was so successful for 15, 20 years under Alex Ferguson. It's why you guys have been perennial, you know, for 10 years. You look at Greg Popovich for the San Antonio Spurs. These guys love, you know, the fact that the media don't like them or appear to go after them. So you should count yourself very, very fortunate that you have a coach that is so good that people hate him, because it means you're going to win loads of games.
That's true, and I wouldn't give him up much of anything. You should be ranting too, though, Simon. Like your team, I don't know what kind of coverage they get in the UK, but you know they've been dragged through the mud pretty egregiously too for their multitude of arrests. Which, if you actually do the research, you find out is because the AD at the time was going through a re-election, and he figured the best way to get his name in the media all the time was to just target the Bengals players, which is on record. You know, that's why they were arrested for traffic stops and everything.
It was ridiculous. It was genuinely some sort of, like you say, it was like a vendetta against the team. And in the AFC North, I will argue to any of my super fans, but we are, without question, the most responsible franchise in the AFC North. And you look at, you know, Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, like, honestly, how easy and how chilled out our team is now is just an absolute breath of fresh air. But still, it's easy for people to have like these stigmas and say, oh yeah, the Bengals are cheap. The Bengals are the only, you know, to get low level people. Well, you know what? Just go off and bore off and go and you know, pick on somebody else, because we're not bothered anymore. You know, we're getting on with our own thing. We're winning games. I know not winning playoff games, but it's just lazy journalism when people just go off on one. Just like, well, just do something, you know, just actually look at the stats, like you say, and it's just incomprehensible that we'd ever be called a bad franchise anymore. But hey, it's easy to write what you know, I guess.
True.
Ken, how about in San Diego?
I'm not the right person to rebut Patrick's rant. I think what this podcast needs is Mark Sitko to sit down with the Steelers super fan to talk about the drug policy and to talk about any sort of Patriots scandal, because he writes the most hilarious things on our email chain, and they just go back and forth. It's hilarious.
Yes, if you're looking for rage and passionate opinions not based in any sort of rational fact, then Mark Sitko is the guy that you want on the phone.
Shots fired.
Mark was the recent host of the NFC East preview with the super fans. That was earlier this week, so you want to check that out. We're on iTunes. You can subscribe there. Please leave a review, and you can catch us at blogtalkradio.com/nextfanup. Gentlemen, any parting words here? Simon, it sounded like you were about to say something else.
No, I'm gonna save it for next time, Pod. And just to sort of say, I've enjoyed this last hour. It's been a great afternoon, and I hope everybody who listens to it enjoys it just as much as I have.
So for Ken, our Charger superfan, for English Simon, our Bengals superfan, and for Patrick, he is the actual Patriots superfan. I am merely Pod Vader saying, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.